Welcome to the Daily Tour Podcast for the 2009 Amgen Tour of California. Hey everyone, this is David Bernstein from the Fredcast Cycling Podcast, and I'm your host. The Daily Tour Podcast brings you daily coverage of the 2009 Amgen Tour of California as we ride through California from Sacramento to San Diego over the span of 9 days. The Daily Tour is brought to you by the Fredcast Cycling Podcast at www.thefredcast.com and powered by the resources of bicycle.net. For your weekly audio dose of cycling news, culture, interviews, product reviews, and more, listen to the Fredcast. And for more cycling news, product reviews, original bicycling essays, and more, bookmark bicycle.net or subscribe to the RSS feeds. In addition to our Daily Tour Podcast, we'll also be bringing you several video clips each day, compliments of our friends at cyclefilm.com. You can find those clips on our website at www.thefredcast.com. And now, here's today's episode of the Daily Tour Podcast. Welcome back to the Daily Tour Podcast. Today is Sunday, February the 15th, and it's time for Stage 1 of the Amgen Tour of California. But before we get to Stage 1, let's go back to our standings after yesterday's prologue in Sacramento, California. After yesterday's individual time trial prologue, Fabian Consolara from Team Saxobank from Switzerland is sitting in first place after putting in a time of 4 minutes and 32 seconds. In second place, our defending champion from the United States and Team Astana, Levi Leipheimer, 2 seconds back. 3 seconds back, also from the United States and Team Garmin Slipstream, it's David Zabriskie. Fourth place, also 3 seconds back, is Michael Rogers from Team Columbia High Road. And fifth, 4 seconds back, it's Tor Husov from Norway and Cervelo Test Team. In sixth, seventh, and eighth, and ninth place, all 4 seconds back, George Hincapie from the U.S., Tom Bonin from Belgium, Mark Renshaw from Australia, and Svein Tuft from Canada. In 10th place, the man it seems everybody is here to see this year, Lance Armstrong from the United States of America and Team Astana. Now, today's Stage 1 is 107.6 miles, 173.2 kilometers, going from Davis, California to Santa Rosa, California. There are 3 categorized climbs. The first is a Category 4, the second a Category 2, and the third is also a Category 4 before the riders descend into Santa Rosa, where they'll do 3 finishing laps in front of what is typically a huge crowd. I remember 2 years ago when we came into Santa Rosa, it was amazing to see people on top of buildings filling parking structures 10 deep at the curb just to watch hometown hero Levi Leipheimer come in. Levi knows this area, knows these roads, and that year he did indeed win. He won also last year, and he was hoping to win again today. Well, last night as I was recording the show, you may have heard the wind roaring, literally roaring, outside my hotel room window as I was getting the show ready. And overnight, not only did the wind get worse, but so did the rain. When we woke up this morning, it was cold, it was wet, it was windy. Did not look like a good day for a bike ride. But the show doesn't stop just for a little bit of weather. The riders did have to go out and ride this stage. And you know, we wanted to know what some of the riders thought about riding in this weather. We caught up with Phil Sutherland from Team Type 1 to ask him his opinion about riding in weather like this.
I guess the harder these guys ride, then the warmer it is. So it's just, you got to do it. It's the same conditions for everybody. So you just want to go hard, and the quicker we get done, the quicker we can get dry again.
We also wanted to know whether or not the weather affects the team's strategy as they go into a stage like this, and whether or not this sort of weather plays into their strategy to begin with.
This can probably be a sprinter stage, and so we don't have one clear sprinter, but we'll definitely have, we got a few guys that'll be trying to get in breaks, and a few guys being protected for GC. And so we'll just be out there trying, the 3 guys that are out there trying to get in breaks, be trying to get in breaks. And, if they can stay away and the sprinters decide not to chase, then we get a good chance. And then we got 3 other guys who are staying protected the entire day.
Earlier, I mentioned Lance Armstrong and the fact that so many people are here to see him. And he's returned to racing to raise awareness for the fight against cancer. Well, Phil Sutherland's team, Team Type 1, rides to raise awareness for diabetes because every racer on the team has diabetes themselves. And we wanted to know, how does someone with diabetes manage that when they're on such a long stage?
I turned my alarms to vibrate and set I've got a long vibrate on my Freestyle Navigator, so when blood sugar is too high, I'll get a short vibrate, like quick buzz buzz, and if it's going to be too low, then I'll get a longer vibrate for projected low, and so then I'll just react according to the vibrations instead of peeling them out of my pockets and whatnot. It's cold, we'll be burning a lot of energy. The bike is my insulin today. I mean, there's insulin pumps out there, so like Fabio uses a wireless insulin pump, and so he's got the best of the best in that technology, but of course, it can always get better, and there's a lot of brilliant people and good companies working on making it better, but we've got, you know, some of the best sponsors in Lantis and Petra, Abbott Diabetes Care, Freestyle Navigator, Insulin Pump, the Omnipod, so there's we got a good little triangle of diabetes technologies, and we're making the most of what we got right now and trying to get other kids out there on bikes so they can, you know, live good lives with diabetes, and we can get some new teammates with diabetes one day.
Also, before today's race, we had the opportunity to speak very briefly with Scott Nidham from Team BMC. Now, Scott is the defending King of the Mountains jersey winner. We talked yesterday that in order to get the King of the Mountains points, you have to be the first one or one of the first people to the top of a King of the Mountains climb. We have three King of the Mountains climbs today, so there are three opportunities to win points. We had an opportunity to talk to Scott a little bit about his team's strategy for today's race, as well as to find out whether or not this weather has an effect on the riders during the race.
Yeah. Definitely BMC's objective is a little bit higher goals this year. I mean, we got wild card status for the Pro Tour circuit, so we're trying to focus more on legitimate results rather than, you know, most aggressive or KOM jerseys. Those don't necessarily qualify for UCI points. So our objectives are a little bit higher and long. We're looking down the road a couple years from now. So we want to succeed there, but we also want to be aggressive. We learned last year that we can be animated and we can be aggressive, and that's something we figured out. Now we just need to figure out how to capitalize that and make sure we get some good results out of it. I think California last year couldn't have gone better. I think that... you know, the KOM jersey, you know, sometimes you never know how hard of a fight that's going to be. So, you know, last year what we got done was extraordinary. Alex rode a great race. I think we're looking for better individual stage finishes, and we're looking for a top 10 on GC. So that's our goal. Certainly, you know, we're trying to get further up towards the podium. But, you know, there's some heavy hitters there today. So we just want to take reasonable steps towards our goals, which is to be in the biggest tours in the world in the coming years. So.
And what about that weather, Scott? What effect is it going to have on you? What effect is it going to have on the team? What effect is it going to have on the rest of the peloton?
You know, it's always something to concern, but in some ways it's a positive thing because, you know, it kind of weeds out people who aren't really that emotionally invested in it. You know, people who aren't that motivated to do well. You know, some guys, you know, people are coming from all directions this time of year. You never know what their winter training was like. So someone like myself and my teammates, I know we had an extraordinary two-week team camp in California where we got it in, you know. So we're all coming in good condition. For me, you know, I've had worse days training this year than the weather looks today. So, you know, it's going to be okay. I think it'll just weed out the people who want it and people who don't, so.
Now, while the men were out battling on the roads of California on their way from Davis to Santa Rosa, there was also a women's race associated with the Amgen Tour of California, and that was taking place on much of the finishing circuits in the streets of Santa Rosa, California. And again, despite the rain, despite the cold, the streets were filled with spectators there to watch these professional women compete in the only women's event as part of the 2009 Amgen Tour of California. And today, that race was won by Emily Fallon of Team Columbia High Road. Second place went out to Lauren Tamayo of Team Tibco, and Rachel Lloyd of Pro-Man took third place. We had the opportunity to talk with Bob Stapleton, the owner of Team Columbia High Road, to discuss the victory and also the future of their team and of women's cycling in general.
Just a great team effort. I mean, we had Kim Anderson and Amelia up in the front group, the breakaway group, and they rode really well together. Kim's a veteran rider. She kept Amelia right on her wheel, chased down all the breaks, and really allowed Amelia, you know, a great chance to save her energy for the final sprint, which she did. She delivered in spades. I think she led the last 400 meters or so, a pretty decisive victory by a young girl who's improving by leaps and bounds, you know, every month that she's with the team. We were particularly lucky also that we had Ina Teutenberg sitting in the main group. So we were well positioned with our two best sprinters, you know, one in the lead group and one in the chase group ready to go.
Now, in case you don't know, the Team Columbia High Road women's squad has been extremely successful. And we wanted to know from owner Bob Stapleton what the goals are going forward in 2009 and beyond.
Well, you know, this they've been number one in the world the last 2 years. They won 3 World Cups. They won the World Cup overall. Judith was number one rider in the world. Ina was number 3. They won 68 races and about 130 starts. I mean, they've kind of accomplished everything you can accomplish, I think, in the sport. I think the big goal now is to develop some additional young talent so that we're well positioned for the next few years in terms of new up-and-coming riders. Some of our veteran riders are considering how much longer they're going to ride. And we want to make sure we've got some fresh new faces and really talented athletes that are ready to continue the kind of the good history and the leadership position the team has in women's cycling. Amelia's a good example. We've got Alex Rybleski, the Canadian national champ, who's really coming on strong in the team. Ellen van Dijk, a young Dutch woman, who just won 2 World Cups just 2 days ago on the track. And, of course, Mara Abbott, last year's U.S. national champ, who I think has a good future in the sport as well. So, you know, we have a big development goal in the team. So it's not just about winning, but winning as a team and then developing these young riders with the help of our veterans.
Of course, Bob mentioning there Mara Abbott, we talked to her on yesterday's episode of the Daily Tour podcast. We also wanted to know from Bob, what is the future of women's cycling and why is it that Team Columbia High Road has placed such an emphasis on supporting women's cycling?
Well, you know, there's no more admirable athlete than female athletes. I mean, they compete because they love the sport they're in. They're not going to get rich. They're not going to make millions of dollars. Maybe they might have some Olympic success, but mainly they participate in the sport because they love it. And they're brilliant teammates. They work well together. And for me, that's very inspirational. They're great teammates, and they really represent the best in sport.
And like the women racing through the wet and cold streets of Santa Rosa, the men did indeed have to get on their trusty steeds this morning and get out on the road. And that they did. And for much of the day, there was one man out in front of the entire field, that man Rock Racing's Francisco Mancebo. Over the course of the day, Mancebo's lead grew to as much as 12 minutes and 30 seconds. And riding in the race caravan today, it was clear that there were lots of difficulties presented by the terrain and the weather in the fact that the commissaires and race radio were having a very difficult time figuring out what the race gaps were between Mancebo and the rest of the peloton. It was a wild and woolly day out there on the road, and it was a day that saw some crashes that were really scary, considering especially who some of the big names were that were in those crashes. I was riding in one of the Mavic neutral technical support cars today, and we'll talk about that in a moment. We actually stopped to help Carlos Sastre when he went down. He went down hard. We went to offer him a wheel. Actually, his car pulled up almost within moments of us stopping to help him. Around the exact same time on the same descent, a name that everybody here certainly knows, Lance Armstrong, also going down. Now, Lance's team, by the way, before today's stage began, well, they started the day with sort of bad news. The fact that they found out that somebody had broken into the Team Astana truck overnight and stolen 4 bikes, 3 racing bikes that were intended to be used today, and Lance Armstrong's one-of-a-kind time trial bike, the one that he used in yesterday's prologue. Lance Armstrong twittering about that, and many other Twitterers echoing Lance's shock at the fact that somebody would do this and trying to figure out what you would do with it, considering that it is specially made for Lance. It is a time trial bike, after all. It's extremely distinctive. I can't imagine it winding up on Craigslist or eBay. This is something that you're going to have to keep very deep in your basement. Otherwise, it's going to be very clear that you stole this bike. Nevertheless, by the time the Peloton reached Santa Rosa, Mancebo had gathered all of the sprint points, all of the King of the Mountain points, and now everybody had expected that this would end up being a sprint finish. The race commissars, however, because of the conditions, determined that they would take the time at the end of the first lap, and that would determine who would be leading in the general classification at the end of the day. The commissars also determined perhaps to try to avoid a similar crash that happened 2 years ago right here in the exact same spot in Santa Rosa. They decided to remove all time bonuses from the finish. Therefore, the only thing on the line at the end of that third finishing circuit would be to determine who would be declared the stage winner. Despite that, the charging peloton was all about trying to bring back Mancebo before the end of those three laps. And on the final descent off the final hill, as we neared Santa Rosa, the peloton got broken up into several groups, with one group of about 16 or 17 riders, including Levi Leipheimer and Lance Armstrong, were giving strong chase of Mancebo. At the end of the day, however, there were just two riders who were able to bridge the gap, at one point riding with Mancebo, and it looked like it would be a sprint to the finish. Now, this, by the way, was not the first time in the day where Mancebo had some company. Remember, Mancebo went away just a few kilometers into the race and was soloing out there for quite some time. At one point, however, being joined by Ouch's Tim Johnson and Fly V Australia's David Kemp. But now, in those last finishing circuits, the two who were able to bridge and catch up with Mancebo were Jürgen Vandewall from Quickstep and Vincenzo Nibali from Liquigas. At the end of the day, however, it simply was not enough, with Francisco Mancebo winning the stage in 4 hours, 11 minutes, and 7 seconds. Second place on the stage going to Jürgen Vandewall from Team Quickstep, and third place going to Vincenzo Nibali from Team Liquigas. So after today's stage one, sitting in first place wearing the leader's jersey tomorrow, it's Rock Racing's Francisco Mancebo from Spain. Second place from the United States and Team Astana, 1 minute and 2 seconds back, it's Levi Leipheimer. In third, Dave Zabriskie from Garmin Slipstream, 1 minute, 3 seconds back. Also 1 minute, 3 seconds back is Michael Rogers from Team Columbia High Road. In fifth place, the man that it seems everyone is here to see is Lance Armstrong from Team Astana, 1 minute, 5 seconds back. In sixth, Lance's teammate Chris Horner from Team Astana, 1 minute, 9 seconds back. In seventh, Thomas Lokvist from Team Columbia High Road, 1 minute 13. Also 1 minute 13, Jose Luis Vigil Rubiera from Team Astana. In 9th, Vincenzo Nibali from Team Liquigas, also 1:13 back. And in 10th, 1:14 back from Team Rabobank, it's Robert Gesink, our best young rider as it stands right now. Francisco Mancebo, after that amazing solo performance today, is also leading for the sprints classification as well as the KOMs. However, because he's wearing the yellow jersey, he will not be wearing the green or the polka dot jersey tomorrow. The best young rider, as I mentioned earlier, Robert Gesink. Now, tomorrow's stage will be starting in Sausalito, California, proceeding across the Golden Gate Bridge. That's going to be a photo op if there ever was one. And ending in Santa Cruz, California. 115.9 miles. That's 186.6 kilometers. Along the way, there are two categorized climbs in tomorrow's Stage 2. The first is at Tunitas Creek Road. That's a Category 2 at 1,562 feet. And the second is Pine Flat Road, a Category 3 at 2,135 feet. Unfortunately, it's looking to be yet another ugly day in the weather here in Northern California. Hopefully, everyone will make it from point A to point B safely. Oh, and by the way, one other note from today's stage, and that is that the stage winner from yesterday's prologue and the previous wearer of the yellow jersey, Fabian Cancellara, pulled out in the middle of today's stage. Apparently, he has a fever. It sounds like he's also got the flu, so we wish him well. What you're listening to here are the sounds inside the race caravan, which is where I spent my day today. Now, Most of the time when you're watching professional cycling on TV, or perhaps if you're lucky enough to be a spectator watching the peloton go by on the road, well, that's exactly what you're looking at, the peloton. And what is absolutely incredible, and what a lot of people simply, they don't watch and they miss, is the beauty and the magic and the, well, the sheer terror that goes on in the race caravan. Today I spent my day in one of the Mavic neutral technical support cars, and thanks so much to their amazing professional team from Mavic for allowing me the opportunity to ride along with them today and observe what it is they do out there on the road for the peloton.
How's the leaky gas rider doing? Copy.
Now, for those of you who heard the Daily Tour's coverage of the 2007 Amgen Tour of California, you'll know that this is not the first time I've ridden with the Mavic Neutral Technical Support Team. But for those of you who weren't listening, what is it that these professionals do out there on the road? Well, as you know, every professional cycling team and every racer is supported by a fleet of vehicles that include those who go out on the race course ahead of the peloton to prepare the feed zone, where they prepare those bags or musettes full of food for each rider to take with them and eat their lunch, if you will, while they're out there on the road. And then there's also the cars that are in the race caravan that have spare bikes on top, spare wheels. Really, it's a rolling bicycle mechanics shop, as well as a platform from which the directors sportif can advise their team members of what the strategy and tactics will be for that day's race. Every single car in the peloton, in the race caravan, has a number and a location and a place where they're supposed to be. But sometimes, if those team cars are out of position, because for instance, if they're helping one of their other riders and another rider has an issue, well, that's why neutral technical support is there. Mavic has several cars in the caravan, as well as several motorcycles. Once again, each of those staffed with professional mechanics, with all of the tools and spare parts that they need to support virtually any rider in the peloton. As you can imagine, that could be quite a challenge when you consider that each team is using different components, be they from Campagnolo or Shimano, or perhaps they're from SRAM. And what if they're using 10-speed? What if they're using 11-speed? The folks at Mavic have tabs on what every team is using. And at the speeds the caravan is traveling, they sometimes only have split seconds to look up, assess the problem, figure out what team it is, get the right parts, get out of the car, and help that rider so that he is back on his bike and back down the road as quickly as humanly possible. And they do an amazing job. It was quite a pleasure to ride along with them today. But in addition to keeping tabs on the riders, the members of the caravan, be they in the Mavic Neutral Technical Support car, or be they in the commissaire's car, or the VIP cars, or any of the other vehicles that are out there, they all have to keep tabs on each other. And in a way, they have to help take care of each other. You see, because as each car has its position within the caravan, for instance, we have to stay behind a certain commissaire's car, and then a team has to be behind us, and then a certain team behind them, and they're supposed to stay in this order. You have to remember, we are speeding down the road at the speed of the peloton, and we need to stay within a very tightly grouped package, if you will. And therefore, while you might not go 40 miles an hour down a hill, literally glued to the bumper of the car in front of you, the people, the professional drivers that are in the race caravan do just that. And they do it in a way that simply looks, well, there's only one word for it, choreographed. It is a constant dance of automobiles flowing in and out of gaps that are created almost instinctively by the drivers. It's as if they can read each other's minds. And in our car, our driver is looking straight ahead. and also trying to coordinate all of his assets in the Mavic neutral technical support team. And by the way, that driver is Mark Nemec. Second time I've driven with him. He is extremely professional at what he does and as good a driver as you'll see on the Grand Prix circuit. From my perspective, you simply can't understand the complexity and the elegance of what goes on at a race until you've had the opportunity to see it from the vantage point of a car within the caravan. And that's why I personally was broadcasting live video when I had cell signal so that you could have an idea of what goes on out there. But the other thing that's amazing that you see from the race caravan is also what goes on along the side of the roads. I've mentioned numerous times already what today's weather was like, but I was blown away not only by the crowds in Santa Rosa, who probably topped their best this year. They were everywhere, 10 deep at the curb and literally on every rooftop and every space that they could find to watch the riders. But even on some of the mountains, I remember one of the KOMs on the way up, it was packed from the bottom of the mountain to the top. And by the time we got to the top, it was in the low 40s Fahrenheit. The wind was blowing, the rain was coming down. And yet there were people that had probably been standing there for hours upon hours just to get a glimpse of the peloton as they went by. We saw everything from guys in gorilla suits to guys wearing no suits at all. And I'm not kidding you there, folks. Firefighters, children, grandparents. We saw so many people out there from so many different walks of life and so many backgrounds. It really was quite incredible. There were firefighters, policemen. There were people who simply stepped out of their homes to watch the spectacle go by. There was Bjarne Riis driving Saxo Bank's Subaru. There was Rock Racing and their Cadillac. There was Johan Bruneel sitting in the passenger seat of his team car, twittering away on his BlackBerry. There were photographers on the back of motorcycles, and that in and of itself is quite amazing because, number one, they have to pay a fee. They've got to bring their own helmet. They sit on the back of these motorcycles. They leapfrog ahead of the peloton. They find the perfect spot from which to take their picture, even if that's in the middle of a cow pasture. They get their photos. They get back on those motorbikes, and they're back out there. The TV cameramen, also on the back of motorbikes, literally standing up, no hands, in the rain, 40, 50 miles an hour, just to get the shot. It really is quite an incredible thing what goes on behind these racers. It's something that most people never see. And thanks once again to Mavic Neutral Technical Support for giving me the opportunity and hopefully the chance to describe it to you as accurately as I could. Now, what I've just described to you is what's supposed to go on in the race caravan. You see, all those vehicles and all those people that I've just mentioned were all supposed to be there. But today, well, for a lot of reasons, be it the weather, be it communications problems, things didn't always go the way that they should. And Kevin Smith from InsideCyclingTV.com captured some audio from two gentlemen that he found who found themselves, unbeknownst to them, within the race caravan. They weren't supposed to be there, but they probably had one of the rides of their life.
Tell us what happened.
Go ahead.
Well, we were taking shots at the bottom of the Howell Mountain grade.
By Calistoga.
Yeah, by Cal. It was just north of Calistoga, and as the last riders, you know, there was a huge breakaway, and then the couple pelotons, and then there were some straggling riders, and as the last riders kind of disappeared, we went back and jumped in the car and went on the road that we'd come in on, which wasn't part of the race, and so we looked and.
I looked on a map and I said, hey, Spring Mountain Road, let's take that thing over the hill.
And it was a left turn away from the race.
Yeah. And we thought, well, we'll never see these guys again. We'll get into Santa Rosa and we'll try to get some camera shots of them coming in town. But we're going down the hill on the other side, and then these cars came up behind us, and what'd you do?
Well, they're blinking lights, and you know, so I kind of pulled over. And as we pulled over, He's yelling at me.
Frank, catch him. That's the race director. We can get in behind them. They'll take us right into Santa Rosa.
and of course, I thought that, well, they'll take us into Santa Rosa, but so we can be able to see the finish at that point. So I thought, okay, well, we put our foot down and away we go. And they're really cruising through the very tight turns into the hills.
So we get a T into the last road coming into Santa Rosa. And because I had this little press pass on me, I hold it up to the CHP guy and I go, hey, we're pressed. So we got in right behind the race director, and there is the leader of the race, the Mavic car, the race director, and us.
How long were you guys following that race director's car?
About 10, 15 miles, at least.
At least 10.
And we were coming in, and people were yelling at us. They were screaming. They had cowbells on the side.
Venue changed, so it's all lined with people. And
yeah.
So now what are we doing? We're still following the same cars.
Tell us how Mancebo looked on the road.
Strong. Boy, he was really moving. If he was hurting, he didn't look like it at all.
His comments in the press conference were that in the last 5Ks he was struggling. Boy, it wasn't. You couldn't prove it by me.
But I'll tell you what, though, 10 minutes after that, when Astana came up the road after them, it was all business because Lance Armstrong was hell-bent on finding those guys.
I have one last question. So where in the caravan can we expect you to be tomorrow?
We'll be the blinking lights in the front of the caravan tomorrow. I'm going to get me some decals, I tell you that.
Thank you, guys.
Also in the interview, of course, was JT from Bicycle.net. So here's two guys who never thought that they'd be part of the race caravan, all of a sudden leading the parade into Santa Rosa. Pretty good experience, if you ask me. After that, we're going to be out of here for yet another episode of the Daily Tour podcast. We will be back again tomorrow with the coverage of Stage 2 of the 2009 Amgen Tour of California. That's it for today's coverage of the 2009 Amgen Tour of California, presented by the Fredcast Cycling Podcast and powered by the resources of Bicycle.net. If you'd like to comment on today's show, please send an email to thefredcast@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out our videos brought to you by cyclefilm.com, located at www.thefredcast.com. This is your host, David Bernstein, from the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. So long from the 2009 Amgen Tour of California, and thanks for listening.